You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. For those who are interested in viewing the 20-part video series that I did with Andrew Bartzis on our galactic history, or in downloading the transcripts, go to www.galactichistory.com. You can support this show and my work by clicking on the donation button at www.afiresidechat.com. Tonight, I'm delighted to have Julian Rose come back on the show. Julian is a champion of organic farming and a hands-on president of the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside, the ICPPC, while leading a high-profile defense of peasant farmers who he holds up as the true guardians of biodiversity throughout the world. Regular listeners to BBC Radio's 4's Framing Today will have heard Julian's 2007 series of once monthly Letters from Poland, passionately highlighting the crisis provoked by forcing corporate globalization onto traditional family farming communities. As a result, there are now GMO-free zones established in Poland, leading the way throughout the global community. Additionally, Julian is a brilliant author. His first book is called Changing Course for Life. His new book is just out, and it's available at Amazon Books, In Defense of Life, Essays on a Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom. You can find all of his material, books, research, and thoughts on his websites, www.julianrose.info and www.changingcourseforlife.info. So let's welcome Julian back now. Hi, Julian. How are you?
Hello, Lance. I'm pretty well. It's 4 o'clock in the morning here.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you for staying up into the night. Since you're an organic farmer, you have the energy to do that, right?
Well, you must be right, Lance, but I'll tell you what happened. I emailed you about 6 times to say that the time planned for the recording was not very suitable, and let's do it at the time we did it last time. But I never heard anything back.
Oh, my God.
I actually went to bed, and I thought, well, there's not much I can do about it. But something woke me up at 3:45 in the morning. So I got out of bed, tramped in here, turned on the light, got my dressing gown on, sat down, turned on that one. What do you know? You came through.
Well, this must be a divinely timed broadcast then, since the Great Spirit woke you up in the middle of the night.
Exactly. Pretty amazing
I should just ask you what's new since we last talked, but I just wanted to say that I've been reading your book, and it is absolutely a magnificent book. Everybody should be reading this book because we're all concerned about GMOs, and not just GMOs, but it's a much bigger picture than this. It's really about the spirit that binds us all together, and that fabric that has been woven is starting to fall apart. You have had firsthand experience of fighting the approach of the European Union, and I was reading, you know, your story with interest. Do you want to go back in time and tell us a little bit about that history and how the EU got in, or anything that you want to talk about?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, let's talk about that, because it's not commonly known that the European Union is a vast trade bloc, you know, not that different from the Pacific Rim, the NAFTA, etc. And its interest like so many of these vast trading blocks, is about money, a power, control. And the early founder of the European Union, Monet, Jean Monnet, actually said outright in a letter to a friend about 60 years ago that he is going to attempt to bring together different countries of Europe without anybody really understanding the reason behind it. He actually said that outright. He said, but we know that the real reason is to create a federation. But they won't know that. They'll think they're being brought together for economic purposes. And, you know, it's pretty extraordinary when you think about it, because so many people today may be uneasy with the European Union and don't like its very, very centralized decision-making process by, incidentally, a commission, which is an unelected dictatorial cabal, in fact, really, whereas the European Parliament is very poor in terms of its ability to be a democracy, and very rarely advice given by the European Parliament to the European Commission is taken. The Commission simply acts on its own volition. Therefore, we don't even get a democratic system emerging out of the European Union either.
Well, right, right. And what do you think is the, you know, in his statement, Monet's statement, what do you think is the ultimate, once they have the federation, that's not a, is that the end? And if that is the end, what is the point of having a federation?
Well, that's exactly it, Lance. Good question. The point of having the federation in this case is to have what you might call a sort of controlled entity with enormous amount of power at its disposal to raise taxes, to raise money for any cause which it feels is the preferable one. Now, when you look at the performance of this vast organization, what's it done? Well, in terms of food and farming, it's just about wiped out the family farm completely. You know, what it's done is insisted upon highly modernized, large-scale monocultures producing food for the global marketplace. And any small-scale organic or traditional-type farm like you find in Poland, so many of these tiny little traditional farms, there it gets virtually no support, whereas the larger farms get a lot of support. How it actually works is a subsidy system for agriculture that is paid on a per hectare basis. So if you've got 2,000 hectares, you know, you get whatever it is per hectare, and it's a lot of money. It's probably something, if you've got 2,000 hectares, you're probably going to get close to 500,000 euro. If you've got 2 hectares, you're going to get about 200 euro. So it's pretty obvious, and using agriculture as the example, that this is all about large things getting larger. And the control system working very, very closely with the corporate end. So the corporate and the, if you like, quasi-democratic end have a common plan, really. And it's been a complete disaster when it comes to the quality of food, quality of life, and independence of countries that once had all their own laws. They don't. All the laws are now made in Brussels by people that have probably never set foot in any in the other countries concerned. So it is actually quite a very extreme example of what was being warned about in by Huxley and by Orwell. It's not the same quite system exactly to the USA, but it is very similar in its overall intention.
Oh, yes. Well, we see that going on over here, of course. And you brought up something interesting that I wasn't aware of, many things that I wasn't aware of. One, that Monsanto, one of the players in the industry, had bought out Cargill, and you mentioned several other names, DuPont, Pioneer, and Syngenta.
Yes.
And you actually went up in front of, you faced the EU inquisitors, and what was that experience like of having to defend or speak up, and what was the dialogue that they were that happened between you?
It was extraordinary. It was really extraordinary. This is in the year 2001. I just met Jadwiga Łopata, and she'd asked me to become vice chairman, well, actually at that time, co-director of the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside. And I had already achieved some sort of a reputation in England. So when we got to Poland, we were able to make contacts with some people quite high up in the administration and raise our concern about the entry of Poland into the European Union. And we met a senior civil servant in Warsaw who set up for us a meeting with the main negotiating team for Poland's entry into the European Union for agriculture and the environment. So we went to Brussels, and we went up, you know, like to the sort of 12th floor of this huge glass building in the European Commission. And there, sitting behind a long table, were about eight people, led by a lady, a chairman, who looked rather annoyed, as if they didn't know why they were there, but they were understood that they had to meet these two people. And we went in, and I said almost immediately to them, look, we've lost virtually all our small family farms in England. So is France and Germany. We've got 20,000 farmers a year leaving the business. We've got a farmer every week committing suicide. This is not something which we relish the prospect of for Poland, a country with 1.5 million to 2 million small farmers, at a time when there's 20% unemployment in the country. Are you really going to use the same methodology in Poland as you did in other countries, or can we have a look at this situation more carefully and consider what should be the right approach? Well, you could have heard a pin drop, you know, to a stony silence. And then eventually this lady simply said to me this. She said, I don't think you understand what the European Union agricultural policy is. So I said, all right, enlighten me. And she said, it's actually about creating parity between the white-collar worker wage in cities and the sort of typical wage earned by a farmer. And they said, you simply can't do that when there's 1.5 million people farming. You have to cut back by about 1 million those people so that the farms can be enlarged, amalgamated, made into competitive, efficient units capable of producing food for the global marketplace. You know, forget the local.
Wow.
And that sums up, really, the whole view of what the purpose of this agricultural policy of the European Union is.
Wow.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, we got that from the horse's mouth, quite literally.
It's absolutely frightening.
Frightening.
You know, I'm an old fan of Orwell and Huxley and Kafka and the rest of them, so I'm familiar with the direction that things are taking, and we see the results of this modernization, quote unquote, going on all over the world. So basically, what they do is they get rid of the small farmers, then they introduce large scale farming techniques. Where do the small farmers go?
Quite right. I mean, that obviously is the question. So I put it to them. I said, where do the small farmers go? And she said, well, you said, you know, they'll eventually find work. They'll have to find part-time jobs and whatever it is. But they'll integrate themselves into the life of the urban life. That's what they said. And I thought, what an amazing naive statement. And then actually, interestingly enough, out of this panel of people, imagine this, eight people negotiating Poland's entry into the European Union for agriculture and the environment, and not one of them was a Pole.
Wow. Wow.
And then the second most incredible thing was a woman who was representing Portugal, who was the only really honest, humane person on that committee, as far as I can see. She said, I have to tell you, you know, since we joined in 1994, we've lost 40% of our farmers, and this was only 7 years later we were having this talk, 40% of all our small farms have already gone, she said. And then she said this, the European Union is simply not interested in small farms, full stop.
Huh. Wow. Wow. That's stunning. You know,
it's stunning,
it's
isn't
so
it?
Funny.
It's stunning, especially if you haven't really been thinking about it. You see, it seems relatively benign, especially to outsiders, the European Union. And if you hear that, listen to the mainstream media, you'll always hear a big argument going on. Oh, you know, we shouldn't be in the, we shouldn't be in, this is like England talking, we shouldn't be in the European Union. And then you get other people coming in and saying, yes, but we're part of Europe and it's very important for trade. And we'd be nowhere if we weren't in the European Union. We'd be out on a limb, you know, we'd be going back in time to, you know, to, and blah, blah, blah. And it, and this, this sort of dialogue's been going on for ages. But right. while it's been going on, everything's been got more and more and more reduced into some sort of perfect administration system run by technocrats who haven't got yeah. the first idea of, or vision of any United Europe validity. They've only got
right.
in their mind.
Right.
You know how it is.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're just making a ton of money, and they're owned and bought and paid for, and they spit out the people and natural life on the planet like you know, old used toilet paper.
Exactly that. They do. And you see, the point is they're extremely well-heeled. Those jobs, you know, when you work for someone like the European Commission, are extremely lucrative jobs, and they carry a lot of kudos with them. So people, yeah. once people get into that way, they certainly don't want to be budged out of it again. You know, they get used right. to that, and that's what they want, and the rest of us have to pay for it. And we
well,
do, of course, because in
yes,
essentially...
Yes, and we do.
Yeah. We pay for it as taxpayers in our own country. We pay for it again when we pay for various administrative levels of the European Union. And then people on the receiving end of subsidies in countries like Poland, they say, oh, look, we're very lucky. We got this big subsidy from the European Union for building roads, new brand new motorways, you know, straight through the heart of the countryside, knocking down forests and all the rest of it in the process. And then they say, I say to them, yeah, but who paid for it? You know?
Right. And
they right. completely, and, people completely yeah. forget that they've paid for it as well.
Right. And they either forget the cost, you know, in terms of destroying nature. You know, there are
yes.
people that realize that tree, even trees have a spirit. And you can't just go, you know, cutting down a redwood forest and paving it just because that's considered progress.
Well, so right there. I totally agree with that one. And I think, actually, you see, after the event, lots of other people have this same experience, but they don't beforehand. And this is the real reason why our world appears not to have woken up. At least if it has woken up, it hasn't got out of bed, which is what I managed to do this morning somehow, proving the point that I must be reasonably aware individual. Because, you know, most people simply don't... You know, they think that sounds nice. Okay, you know, we want another road. We want to be able to get more quickly from these two cities to the other one in order to do the 9-to-5 job, which itself is probably contributing to even more horrible things going on the planet. So they let the road be built, but then they think afterwards, oh, what happened to that beautiful forest and, you know, that lovely feeling of calm I used to get when I went into it. And so basically, you know, this is our problem in life. We cannot seem to understand in advance or anticipate the level of destruction that's going to be caused by this quasi-modernization process, this efficiency route that is being taken by virtually all main administrations who feel that progress means economic growth, full stop.
Right. And of course, according to them, there can be no end to that economic growth, or else they are out of a job. And so their real job is to manufacture false starts, false flags,
yeah.
and everything that's not contributing to the planet and to the health of the human. So we're being dehumanized. And then, so these people are supposed to reorient themselves in the cities. But don't we realize that unemployment is probably at 40, 50, 60, 70% and even higher for the young people in some of the cities over there in Europe, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. In fact, in Poland, it's running now around 13 and 14. But even those figures are disguised. I mean, now
right.
I don't even trust any of the statistics put out. Yeah, it's probably running at 19%, but actually they managed to fiddle the book, so it looks like you know, 12 to 14%, because that sort of thing gets people thrown out of office eventually if people get the news that there's such a huge unemployment level. And of course, that's the last thing anyone that's got into power wants, anyone to understand the facts enough to have the chance to remove them from power. So it's just about everything's fiddled. So this, what it amounts to in my mind, Lance, is something we were talking about in the last show, which is this. People, having woken up to the fact of what's actually going on, they have to start withdrawing the support for that which destroys. You mentioned the trees as a very good example, but you know, it destroys, in the end, almost everything of real value on a, what you might call, that happens on a human scale, mm-hmm. in local communities. All that is the thing which is ultimately going to be pushed aside in favor of this vast megalomania-orientated cabals running the whole of the world from inside air-conditioned offices with computers. So we have to destroy, we have to withdraw our support for that which destroys, another way, in the environment, issues of environment, food, health, and our own sanity and our spirit has to be the major issues that we protect in this day and age. And how can we protect these? Well, you have to take very pragmatic steps. You have to simply say to yourself, food, right, I'm not going to go to Walmart to buy my food, because I know if I go to Walmart to buy my food, they are contributing to the destruction of agriculture and mm-hmm. the modernization of it to the extent that there's going to be nobody working out there. There's only going to be automatons, vast ones, crossing fields, dispensing agrochemicals on these sort of million-acre-sized fields in the Midwest, and the topsoil, which is virtually gone already, will be gone completely. You know, you say that about yourself, and then you say, what about the health factor? Well, you say, okay, I'm going to give up Big Pharma. I'm going to go and find alternative sources of health for myself, mm-hmm. which are based on herbal medicine, natural cures, et cetera, et cetera. So it goes on. So you find yourself the alternative, and you go for that, and you start withdrawing your support, because that's what it actually is, from the status quo. Until we start withdrawing our support for the status quo, we're guilty of actually complicity in supporting it, aren't we? Mm. If we talk mm-hmm. like this, and yet we still carry on shopping at Walmart and buying all thousands of pills from the pharmaceutical, then in fact we're just, you know, destroying our own belief system, our new mm-hmm. belief system.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I would take that even further, that if we're having difficulties economically and we can see the result of what is happening with all the money going to the big banks, take your money out of the banks.
Wow,
you
yes.
You know, withdraw it. Every dollar you have in a bank account is they're allowed to leverage by it 100 times. So if you have $1,000 in there, you multiply that times 100, that's how much they can loan out. Get more people in debt by $100,000 with your money. So that's
well, that
another,
is
you know.
So true, Dance. I mean, that is absolutely the first step to take, to withdraw your money from the mainstream banking system. Now, everybody out there, did you hear that? You know, number one step. Now, we're quite fortunate in the UK in this respect, because we do have a fair number of what's called ethical investment organizations, which are alternative banking. And the ethical is the key issue here. And they are banks on a much smaller scale than the mainstream banks, most of them, apart from one which is called the Cooperative, which is a large-scale bank. Most of them are fairly small scale, but they look after you very well. And what they have is a charter, and the charter says, we do not invest in the war machine, you know, drones, nuclear power, GMO, agrochemicals, etc. And they pledge that. So when you put your money in that bank, it is not being reinvested in supporting the death system, if you like. So I was mm-hmm. delighted to hear you put that up at number one. I totally agree with you. I think that's where it belongs. This is the first real sign that we're taking it seriously, this ability to take our destiny in our own hands and even the future of our planet in our own hands.
Absolutely, because, you know, people read all the news and they say, oh, well, I'm too small. What could I do? But if people stop and think about it, look at your assets. How much do you have in a retirement account? How much do you have in the bank? If you have more than a couple of $1,000s in there, you've got a lot of money. You know, fortunately, I don't have any money, so I don't have to worry about it.
And I think that's becoming increasingly the case for many of us as much. But, yes, exactly, if you do, then, you know, one of the first things I did when I got wind of this was to start doing research about fractional reserve banking and which is, of course, the early system of usury, as it was called in the Bible in those days, being lent money at interest.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and when I really worked it out and saw what was going on, I actually amazed myself. I thought, oh, now I get it. So you go into a bank, you say, look, I'd like to take out a £50,000 loan to start building a ecological house, you know. And they say, yes, all right, Sir Julian, yes, you know, that's perfectly okay. I think you've got some collateral backing behind you, blah, blah, blah. Here you are. It is. And all they do nowadays, they didn't used to in the past, but this nowadays, they hit a button on the computer and you find you've got £50,000. But, you know, you've got a rate of repayment of interest at 6.5%. And then you tend to do is forget about the capital repayment as though it's all being sort of given to you. And all you actually have to do is pay the interest. Oh, no, of course not. You pay the capital back at a percentage per annum as well. So when your bill starts coming in for the amount you owe, you realize that, you know, you're really up against it. And you've probably taken out a loan for 5 years or 10 years, could even be more. Mortgaging houses, for instance, you know, even more, paying on a mortgage. So what happens then is you start thinking, well, how did I actually get this money? And then you think, wow, they didn't give me any money. They just hit a button and it said, you've got 50,000, but there was no money exchanged by the bank. They didn't actually give me any money, but I started paying them immediately. You see, no money was exchanged. There was no money exchanged.
That's right.
The banker simply took the interest and the capital and started making a lot of money out of it. So the bank started being the money maker and we just became the slave to the money making system. So
absolutely,
the whole world is based on this debt system. That is why there are so many trillion dollar debts in the USA, you know, trillion pound debts in England. It's all based on people thinking they're getting nice mortgages, cheap money, finally being unable to pay it, is what happened in 2008, 2009, the Lehman Brothers collapse, et cetera, Morgan Stanley. All of a sudden, they weren't getting the payments from us. They you know, had to turn to government and say, bail us out. We're too important. We're too big, you know, to fall. So the government does it. What did it do it by? Well, again, taking the money from us to bail them out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the the horrendous truth of the matter is I had G. Edward Griffin on the show last week, I think it was, or the week before, and he is the one who came up with the original book, The Creature of Jekyll Island, about the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, and how it was a group of bankers that got together on Jekyll Island and came up with this ingenious plan to create a thing called the Federal Reserve. And they pushed it through eventually through Congress and the House and the rest of it. And basically, it's a banking institution that loans money to the government at interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's not even a government agency, but they took over the printing and the loaning of money for the federal government. So they have basically created a situation where they can have all the money they want and they have no accountability to anybody.
It's incredible, isn't it?
That is
absolutely right. And you know, this system is being copied pretty much across the world in slightly different forms. For instance, you know, you get many banks that claim they haven't. I mean, the Bank of England doesn't like to print money when it could. So instead of doing that, you know, it leaves the private banking system to run the money situation, and it stands back in the background, taking a sort of overview of it. And all these issues ultimately, you know, come down to this famous Illuminati phenomena, which is a small cabal of people with interests totally outside the interests of ordinary people, trying to make a living, trying to run a decent life with a family, get their holidays, you know, love one another in a simple, pleasant way. Not at all. They don't have any of those aspirations. They only have aspirations to maintain and control and to always gain more power, of course. So there we have this, you know, 13 bloodline families who have been operating in that spirit probably for the last 800, 900 years, maybe up to 2,000 years, intermarrying at the cousin level, maybe third, second cousins, keeping the wealth always in the same group of people. And those individuals, if you like, are finally, at this point in history, being challenged, you know, at the core level. Up until then, no one's really known or understood what's been going on. The good news is, Lance, I think, and I'd be interested to hear your take on this, that, you know, the awakening, as we now call it, is finally targeting this reality and is recognizing that this is, you know, the source of so much of the control system which affects our lives on a daily basis. Whereas we had thought it was individually that organization, that bank, that war, or that president of that country. And we now see that it isn't. They are contributory factors, you know.
Right.
But they aren't the ones making the decisions in the background.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And of
so
course,
then,
you know,
what happens in fact then is that we start thinking about the fact, how do we raise, once we've got this sort of awareness, how do we raise awareness in other people? And then comes in your show, for instance, all the other internet alternative sites which have sprung up to warn people and to show people, based on the fact that people have done their research. And so now, all of a sudden, in the last really 10 years or so since the internet has been put forward as one of the main forms of communication on the planet, we suddenly have a massive amount of information bursting out, which people are eagerly latching onto and expanding their own sense of awareness about what it is that's affecting their lives and how they can take control of that and change things around.
Absolutely. You know, we are the 99%, and it's time for us to realize that we're the ones that hold the power, and that's what they don't want us to understand, and that's why there's such a concerted effort at many different levels to attack and assault the organic living human being, which you talk about in your book about HARP, weather wars, chemtrails. There are all kinds of GMO foods. You know, I've seen the results of animals eating GMOs, and it's absolutely horrifying. And they're in most of our food now. You know,
that's
the corn
correct.
And there's very little that it has, and that's part of the plan that they use to contaminate farms. They dump this is off the record, but mysteriously, farmers find GMO seeds cropping up with their own crops, and then they're accused of, copyright infringement. And unfortunately for all of us, these seeds have been engineered to be dead. They'll give birth for 1 year, and then the seeds will not reproduce, so they're sterile. And I think that's ultimately the agenda that the elite, the Illuminati, would like us to be on, that we become sterile. And all of these things are contributing to increased infertility, along with cancer and brain tumors and autism and ADHD. And we're going to see a plethora of new things with all the nuclear waste that's being released into the world with places that we don't even know about. Forget about Fukushima. And what about the New Orleans spill? That's still going on there. That has not even begun to reveal the horrors and the death and the contamination to life that it has released into our planet.
And yes, the corporations, you know, that is the list of horrors which we are indeed confronted with. And I would only add to that, really, that we are right at the cutting edge of this GMO issue here in Poland. Jadwiga and myself, we've been grappling with the extremacy of that, and that's the reason why we've made an all-out attempt to prevent it ever getting into this country, because we've seen the results, particularly from America, where, as you rightly say, 90% of your soya, your maize, many other foods, unfortunately, now on top of that, rice, etc., cotton and clothes. So it goes, the list goes on and on. Tomatoes, various vegetables going that way, are being put into the human food chain without any labeling, any knowledge of people that they're eating and ingesting things which are fundamentally destructive to their immune systems. And I've been proven by 5 independent laboratories in Europe to cause sterility. The way that this was proved, incidentally, was totally outside the mainstream laboratory process, which is run by corporations. And the European Union has its own food safety agency. On that agency is a board of people, a number of whom have direct connection with the GMO industry. So when they get a request from Monsanto Corporation or any of the others, DuPont, Pioneer, etc., to accept a new patent on a product, they look at it and they see, they say that they've done the testing. They've done the testing, have they? And there was no problem. Okay, there was no problem with that testing. Good. So they pass it through. They tell the European Commission, yeah, we've read that. We've seen the reports and we were perfectly satisfied that this is going to do no harm. And so, you know, what you actually get there is an organization set up as a consumer protective system, which is actually part of the same problem. And they pass this stuff through. So what we've really had to do there is warn people also about what's happening in Brussels. You know, you have to tell people in Poland, it's not just happening in your own country. The whole thing's starting from Brussels. They're going to take on the American system and they're going to push us into the situation where we too will be eating all sorts of GMO foods without having the first idea that we're doing it. And in these 5 independent laboratories that did these tests, they were 2 of them were actually government laboratories themselves, one in particular in Austria. And Austria is a country which is 100% committed to stop GMO getting into its country in an amazingly successful way. The government itself has even used its top lawyers to find problems in the legal position taken by Brussels in trying to force GMO in. So those countries have in various ways ensured that independent tests have been done using rodents, being fed GMO ingredients, typical GMO ingredients that we'd find in animal feed on any big farm, because, you know, mm-hmm. GMO soy or maize are the chief sources of animal feed. They used that in a diluted form, and fed it to rodents, mice or rats. And they did it for 2 years, whereas the normal process is only 9 months, right? Mm-hmm. And on the 2-year process, you see something completely different. You see that after a year, and that's 3 months longer than the typical analysis, after 1 year, they are getting serious lesions of the kidneys and liver. Serious. Mm-hmm. After a year and a half, they're developing tumors. And after 2 years, they are sterile. And after 3.5 to 4 years, they're dead. I mean, that is what all these 5 to 6 independent laboratories in different European countries came up with, totally independently of each other. So there we have the absolutely foolproof testing, which is showing that on humans, you know, you'd have to say, if you take the weight of a mouse by comparison to the weight of a human being, you probably have to multiply the time factor. I multiply it by about 20. And I say, in 20 years' time, mysteriously, a vast percentage of the American population, because that is the way it's the worst, unfortunately, are going to find they are unable to reproduce. And are any of them going to know why?
No. No. It will be a big mystery, and then for 10 years they'll be researching it like they do with Morgellons disease and a lot of other ridiculous diseases that were given intentionally, some of them through vaccinations. You know, and they'll dilly-dally around with that for a while, and then eventually it's like the bees, you know.
Yes.
The bees, look at China with the bees. They do not have enough bees to pollinate their beautiful fruits. They have a fruit that is unique to China, and there's a whole region there where the farmers were forced eventually to, or enticed, let's say, to the cities for better jobs. And the bees died in many of these areas, and they have to now bring farmers back in to hand pollinate the flowers.
Wow.
And if you think that's an easy job, to take a brush and pollen and pollinate manually, because it's a huge industry there. They rely on this unique fruit. They have to go out with thousands of workers and just do this by hand all day long, where a bee just flips, you know, to from flower to flower. And it, and they, there's evidence that supports the idea that the chemicals produced by some of these big pharmaceutical companies are killing the bees. Well, I could have told you that when the second I heard that they were dying. You know?
Exactly.
The bees communicate. Everything communicates with everything else. And so we can tune into the message from the flowers and the trees and the bees. And, you know, people would call you wacky. But this is how the peasants and the poor people and the people on the land, I'm saying this is a good thing, they know things that we don't know. This is what's being lost. And I would be curious to ask you, what is the loss of, you know, in the farm of the love and the communication between the farmer doing things by hand and allowing the chickens to roost and the animals to freely graze?
That's really is getting down to the essence of it. I would say this about that, Lance. This is the most humanizing force that exists on this planet. The work that an ordinary traditional farmer does over many, many years, and probably quite often in some cases over decades, because he's inherited a farm from his father and from his grandfather, etc., etc. The work those farmers are doing with the small groups of animals and crops creates a sense of intimacy, which is probably the closest example we have to a sane society.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if you cut out that element in it and say, no, it's not, it's just a job. It's no different than making microchips and motor cars. You're on a production line. You're out to be efficient. You're there to, you know, create as much many crops and as many fat bullocks as you possibly can within a certain amount of time, and you'll get paid a sort of medium amount of money to achieve it if you achieve it. If not, you're not an efficient farmer, and there's no point in having you on this planet. You know, you should step aside and let those who are prepared to be efficient business people take over. That is the plight of our planet today. And what we have to do about it is that we have to reorganize ourselves as self-autonomous small groups. And that is, in my mind, the answer to the failure of democracy. Democracy hasn't worked, quite frankly. And
No. It
hasn't worked because it's happening on much too large a scale. Once something gets very big, and let's use the farm as the example here. You know, once a farm gets very big, you don't go to each individual animal and feed it. You don't see your roosters, you know, coming out. You don't open the door in the morning and say, hello, good morning, roosters. And he comes charging out, you know, rushing around, scratching for corn. You don't do any of those things. You go into some vast alley shed which contains 20,000 chickens, all of which are being fed a GMO diet laced with antibiotics because it's the only thing that keeps them free of disease. You hit a button and it you know, turns on a vast machine which feeds them this vile food. They live at the best for the best 3 months when they could be living for 4 years, and then they're dispatched using another machine which cuts their head off, and then they land up in the supermarket as your bargain of the day, everybody. Come on, you know. Don't you want the cheapest chicken thigh there is available? Well, come and shop at Walmart, and you'll find it.
Yeah.
And when you when you do, that is exactly the process that you have supported. You've supported animal concentration camp. And until people wake up to this and start taking their life into their own hands in small, I call it self-autonomous small groups. We've been running a series of workshops over here, Lance, called Quit the Matrix, Build the Ark.
Oh, nice.
I think you'll get there.
I wish I was over there, Julian. I'd be in there digging in the soil and learning and teaching and sharing and eating good foods right along with you guys.
Yeah, so I know you would. I know you would. So quit the matrix, build the ark. Now, what does this really mean? Well, it's obvious in a way. Quit the matrix. We've got to, as we said at the beginning of this program, we've got to withdraw your support. Now, okay, you can't do it all at once. So you start with the bank, you know, and then you move to not going to the supermarket, support small, local, independent store stocking genuine and possible organic food produced by local farmers, if possible, etc. You know, with your health, same thing. withdraw yourself from Big Pharma and start also going to people who know what they're talking about, who have what you described, you know, this knowledge of the land, this intimacy with the land, mm-hmm. this sense mm-hmm. of understanding how nature ticks and vibrating with it as opposed to working against it, which everything in modern agriculture has been doing for the last 200 years, in many ways since the Industrial Revolution in England, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So all these steps can be taken, and the people that take them then need to come together, don't they, actually? Because it's not going to get better by standing back and watching. It's only going to get better when we take action to make it better. And therefore,
yeah, right.
forming small, self-autonomous groups of people who take this attitude about taking control of life in a humane way are going to be arcs in the future. They're going to be the equivalent of Noah's arcs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they will,
mm-hmm.
if there's enough of us in our small self-autonomous groups, we will eventually link up. And when we link up, we will find out that we're all actually doing rather similar things, maybe with slightly different emphases, depending on the individuals involved. And that
mm-hmm.
way, we will be forming the beginning of a new society,
mm-hmm.
a new society freed from the autocratic control system, which operates really based on people power, people knowledge, people wisdom. And that is where I believe we've got to today, because, you know, we have run through a list, you and I, of various, it's just the tip of the iceberg, what we've talked
oh,
about.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah. and unless we are prepared to actually do something about it, we will find ourselves in danger of lending our lives, saying, oh my God, in the end, all we did was talk about it. And you know, we didn't actually get out there and take any action. And then we will feel very bad about it, because what were we given this mind for, and this heart mm-hmm. for, and this spirit for, this, if it's not to actually put into effect the things that we feel passionate about and believe in?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, mothers should care greatly about these issues, because GMO foods are in the baby food, and not only that, fluoride is put into some baby foods. Now, you'll have to Google something to the effect of which, you know, where is fluoride? What foods are in fluoride? You know, you got to mind use it. But it is in baby food, and it is known to, the toxic fluoride is known to calcify the pineal gland, and they're giving it to babies.
Wow.
So, you know, there's that. And there's plenty of reason to be concerned, but like you said, it's not just enough to talk about it. We mm-hmm. have to take action, and it starts with our own lives. It can't start with changing the system, because that's too big.
Yeah.
And we're acknowledging this, the Illuminati, the elite, they've won the war, basically, in the sense that they have the machinery. But the machinery will all come to a grinding halt when the individuals stop running it. And
yes.
stop running to it like a teat.
That's it. A very good expression.
You know,
it
David
is right.
And
I mean, the thing there, what I would only add to that is that one has to build up in one's mind a sense of vision, imagination. We have to use our imagination for what we would like to replace that system with, you see?
Yes.
Don't we?
Yes.
So in other words, we have to nourish our imagination with things of beauty.
Yes.
With things of
yes.
love. With things that make
yes.
us feel good. And then rather yes. than say, oh, what a lovely pipe dream, you know, I know that'll never happen, we have to get rid of that way of thinking and simply say, I'm determined. I'm on this planet, as far as I know, for a very short period of time. I've been given an amazing potential by my creator. I don't think I'm using more than about one-tenth of it. I'm going to try and use it to its maximum in the time I'm left on this planet. And I'm going to actually try and make that vision come to be. Well, what's the
yes.
point in living otherwise? You know, let's get
yeah,
on with
absolutely.
it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow.
And when we do that, we start chiming in with the vibratory level of the universe, which we all come from. And, you know, we start, what I always say is the angels start working with us. But I have a very romantic view, you know, and I actually see these angelic figures. But you don't have to. All you have to know is that, you know, once you start going for the thing which is what life intended you to do, you get support from places where you never expected it to come from. And your whole life can change by the fact that you made that, that one decision, that one major decision to take matters into your own hand in support of life. In fact, in the name of my book, in defense of life. Because we have to defend life itself now. There's no better example than the GMO one. You know, the attempt there is to alter the genetic pool of life forever. So it no longer is controlled at all by nature, only controlled by man. And, and there's a really scary thought. So once you've got that one in your brain, you must say to yourself, I'm going to come out in defense of life, real life, the things I love. And that is why I'm here on this planet.
Beautifully said, Julian. Beautifully said. Eloquent and elegant.
And passionate.
And passionate, yes. Yes, and we need our passion. It's important to fuel our passion. And, you know, and it's, you know, a lot of the people in the New Age movement are, you know, saying, well, you need, you know, we can't be too excited about anything. But this is something that we need to get excited about because it is exciting.
And, oh, my Lord, yes.
You know, yes, I want to have another show that we do where we talk about those angels that you're talking about because a lot of people see those things.
Yes, they do. The passion is the same as truth, and the truth is the same as love. Those things are all the same. And point is, you see, passion is what gets you actually out of bed. I'm writing an essay at the moment, which is called You Might Have Woken Up, But Are You Going to Get Out of Bed?
Well, you did at 4 o'clock in the morning to do this show, so...
Yeah, I reckon we've got about 4 minutes left. Am I right?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the computer screen. So, you know, my message to those people who have confused their spiritual aspirations with trying to remain cool, in quotes, I say to them, that is completely the wrong interpretation of what passion means. Passion for life is passion for truth, for love, for beauty. We are part of nature. We are not separate from it, looking at it through binoculars. We are part of nature. We must work with nature, not against nature. And that means also working with ourselves because, you know, working with the beauty and love and passion in ourselves because it's the passion that makes things happen, change in the world. Don't tell me Gandhi wasn't passionate, you know. Don't tell me that Martin Luther King wasn't passionate. Listen to his speeches. You know, any great orator, any great leader who has moved people deeply at the heart level has done it from a controlled passion. And really, that's the missing ingredient in so many of these quasi-spiritual groups today. And we must make quite sure, I think, at least in terms of what we believe in, that we support believing in it. I give an example of someone who walks into your garden and starts chopping down your favorite fruit tree. I say, what are you going to do? You're going to sit there cross-legged meditating, hoping that person's going to go away? Or are you going to come up to that person and say, this is a vile act of destruction you're doing. Leave my garden at once. Now, you can hear by my tone of voice and by my body language that I'm standing up for something by doing that. I'm standing
up.
Well,
Julian, we've got about 10 seconds left, and so maybe you could mention your website before we go, and then we'll sign off, and we'll get you back again in a month or two, and we'll have another chat.
Yes, certainly, Lance. Well, my website's a simple one. It's just www.julianrose.info, and on that site you will find all sorts of interesting things, including how to buy my latest book, In Defense of Life, A Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom. And I look forward to speaking to you all again before too long.
Yes, you will, Julian. Thank you so much for coming back. And we'll be in touch. And good night, everybody.